Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about climate change. You know, as gardeners, we know it's affected how things work in the garden. But what about some of our iconic state products like oats, cheese, beer, potatoes, wild rice? Mary Kate McCoy is with me in the studio right now. She's a digital content producer for Wisconsin Public Radio. And she just completed a really cool series of stories about those products. It's called On the Table. So we'll talk with her about what she found out relating to climate change and some of these iconic products. So you may have some concerns about the effect of climate change on some of our state products. Maybe a question for her. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Mary Kate McCoy, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you back. We talked for a few minutes earlier in the week about this, but I think it's really an interesting series. And maybe talk about where your ideas came from for that series.
Yeah, so it really kind of came from me just thinking about climate change and how big of an issue it is, right? Mm-hmm. How it affects so many different things, but it affects them in unique ways. So, you know, I was trying to find a way that maybe this might be make the story a little smaller and more relatable. And that's kind of how I came to food because, you know, I mean, we all have to eat. We all care about food. Food's such a big part of culture and things like that. So that's kind of how I moved it into that direction. Then it just really snowballed from there.
And the products, go through. Which products did you have?
Yeah, so there's cheese, beer, wild rice, cranberries, walleye, and potatoes.
Yeah, so it's a pretty broad
range. It's a pretty diverse list.
Pretty broad range of things there.
Yeah.
And it's all it's all digital.
That's right.
Print.
Yep, that's right. Yep. I've made a few appearances on air, but you can find the whole series on WPR.org/table.
I think it's really cool. And let's talk about maybe we'll talk about all of them. I don't know. We'll see what we get to. Dairy, of course.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Nothing more iconic than the dairy farms of Wisconsin. How's and cheese, of course, when we think about it.
Yeah.
How has climate change or how is it affecting cheese production?
Right. So it really is affecting it through cows, right? That's why we're kind of using dairy and cheese interchangeably a bit here. But, you know, you can start with the crops, right? So the majority of the corn that we grow in the state of Wisconsin goes towards feeding cows and feeding cattle, right? And in the last few years, we've had some really intense rainfalls. 2019 was, you know, the wettest year that we've had on record. And that was capping off the wettest decade that we've had on record. And that's made farming and growing corn really, really difficult, right? Like some of the farmers I talked to said that the ground is kind of just always saturated and it's really difficult to work with. So, you know, it's affecting cheese production in the sense that it's harder to, you know, feed the cows and feed prices are getting more expensive. But then another way it's also affecting cheese production is you know, it's Wisconsin's getting warmer. We've warmed by about 2 degrees since 1950, and we're going to warm by an additional 2 to 8 degrees by mid-century. And that's a problem because cows like it cold.
I think their
optimal temperature is between about 25 and 65 degrees. So, like, when it gets really warm, milk production goes down. And the milk that they do produce is also lower in fat and lower in protein, which is a problem for cheesemakers who prefer...
Yeah, we need the fat.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what makes it so tasty, right? And so, like, if it exceeds about 90 degrees, milk production can drop by as much as 25%. So, you know, farmers
that's
are concerned.
A huge...
It's a big amount, right? And farmers are really concerned about seeing their cows produce less and less milk. One farmer that I spoke to said, you know, you can see it immediately that day when it gets really warm. And then, you know, an additional thing with like warming temperatures and climate change is that there's going to be an increase in heat waves. So those extended periods of above 90 degrees and whatnot, as well as, you know, summer nights, they're just not cooling off the same way that they used to.
Combine that with the water, too much water. Mm. And you've got, I mean, it's hard for farmers. I mean, it's hard enough as it is to make a living.
Right. Yeah, the unpredictability of what's happening and how to manage their fields. I think it's getting more difficult to manage, and it's getting more expensive to manage. One other thing I didn't mention, but you know, if we get these intense rains and a road gets flooded, they can't transport their goods too. You know, so it, from so many different angles, it affects their production.
But the cheesemakers are still doing a pretty good job. I think the World Cheese Championships were just announced the Grand Champion, which was from Switzerland, actually. But I think the Wisconsin cheesemakers had a large, 38 or something like that, champion cheeses in the different categories.
I think you're right.
Out of about 140 or something like that. That's a pretty good number.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still doing a good job. We seem to be doing a pretty good job with beer, too.
Yeah.
It ranks right up there with cheese when it comes to Wisconsin products. And it's quite a kind of a really cool history, I think, in the state. And that industry has changed a lot over the years, and I'm wondering what you think about climate change as it relates to beer.
Right. Yeah, like you said, it's in the last decade it's changed tremendously, right? You know, people's tastes are changing. The bigger, bolder, more craft beers are becoming more popular. You know, one way to illustrate that is, I think it was in 2012, there were about 70 craft breweries across Wisconsin. That's tripled in those, 8 years. And it's slowing down a little bit, but it's still growing. So people really want that product. And it's a local product that people have really kind of embraced, I think. In terms of climate change, beer is getting affected in kind of two main ways. So there's the agricultural supply chain. So like the barley, the wheat, and the hops that are grown to brew the beer, but then also water. And water is a big one. That's what brewers, I think, are most concerned about. But, you know, in terms of agriculture, the barley and the hops are where they're grown is concentrated to a fairly like specific geographic region in the United States. So it's mostly the Pacific Northwest and the northern western states. And they, you know, they deal with drought more than we do and heat concerns. And, you know, barley is a cool weather crop. So if an intense, you know, storm or weather event were to happen there, it can really, disrupt the supply chain for brewers in Wisconsin.
I don't know if it'll affect hops as much. Will it affect hops as well?
Yeah, it will, I think, in some ways. And hops are, you know, hops are even more difficult to deal with, I think, if something happens, right? Because they're a perennial crop. So if you lose one or whatever, it takes about 3 years for it to be kind of up to speed and be able to be used again. And then, like I mentioned, water is the big one. I spoke to a brewer from Octopi in South Central Wisconsin, and he said that he's dealt with disruptions to supply chain before, but it doesn't compare to his concerns about water, right? I mean, beer is 90% to 95% water, so having access to clean, good water is really important. Wisconsin kind of has somewhat of an advantage in that sense. You know, we're not a water scarce state like a lot of Western states that also brew a lot of beer. So, yeah.
Dennis in Two Rivers has a question. So let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I've heard grass-fed beef is usually better for us to eat, but then I think with muddy fields, if cows go out to graze, they might not cope with the mud very well, and farmers would have a hard time getting out with machines to harvest any form of grass. So how are they dealing with that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, my reporting didn't get too much into how farmers who graze deal with muddy fields. I will say that rotational grazing is something that farmers and experts really point to as something that's would help Wisconsin be more resilient in the face of flooding, right? Because they're perennial crops, right? So they're good for soil health. They prevent erosion. They don't get washed out kind of in the same way that corn can. So rotational grazing is something that people really point to as being really beneficial to the environment as climate is changing.
Yeah, and I think we're probably going to see a lot more of that with certainly it's if you've got a grass-fed beef operation, you're probably going to be doing rotational grazing. There's no way around it.
Right.
So there you go, Dennis. Thanks so much for calling. All this talk about water, of course, wild rice. Here we have wild rice is growing in water.
Yeah.
So you might think, oh, okay, well, we've got plenty of water. Wild rice should do okay, but there's problems.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, it's really, wild rice is a really sensitive plant, right? So it needs water, but it needs a pretty specific amount of water. It's about a half a foot to 3 feet. So if it's too much and the water
gets to 4.5.
Yeah, it's a really big problem. It can essentially drown the plant, or it can like uproot its root system because it's so shallow. And it also needs water that like flows at a specific pace too, not too much, but enough, because if it's too still, it can be outcompeted by plants like lilies or cattails. So it needs it, but it's also very, very, very picky. You know, some of the researchers I spoke to for that story said that, you know, everyone who works with wild rice realizes just how sensitive it is and how it's a plant that's going to, suffer maybe even the most from climate change.
And it has such a deep meaning for our native populations.
Right.
And for, I don't know that there's a commercial operation.
Yeah, I think that there's some.
There are some.
Yeah, I don't think it's big.
But they're not
big,
what you'd call enormous, big, conglomerate-type organizations.
Right.
So they're pretty quickly affected when they when these conditions change. Did they talk about, did anybody that you visited with talk about what they're trying to do?
Yeah, so a lot of time, money, and effort has been put into restoration efforts. So it is like going into the into these waterways and removing those cattails and those lilies and plants that are, you know, out-competing wild rice. Climate change is a really big deal with wild rice. A researcher I spoke to said that it's, you know, probably the biggest threat that wild rice has ever faced. It's not the only threat that wild rice is facing, right? So, like, human activity plays a role, too. So driving your motorboat near wild rice is not good for it.
No.
Yeah, and you know, it's one thing I didn't mention about, you know, water, too, is, like, these intense, I mean, there's a theme, right? These intense rains are bad for just about everything that we're talking about. But just kind of the warmer temperatures, the increase in precipitation, the humidity is also, people are really concerned about brown spot disease, which is a fungal disease that can wipe out wild rice pretty darn quickly. And, you know, as conditions get warmer and climate change becomes even more present, people are really concerned that it's going to be a bigger deal going forward. You know, outbreaks haven't been super common in the past, but they're growing. And, you know, wild rice is a native plant, right?
Yeah.
So it's adapted alongside Wisconsin's really harsh winters. So it, you know, it needs that. It needs those cold winters to, to be able to germinate in the spring.
You know, a plant that I don't think is native is the russet Burbank potato. when I saw that you were doing a piece on potatoes and climate change, I thought right away to a guy by the name of John Shaneman, who was a horticulturist at the University of Wisconsin and just passed away in January of this year. And I interviewed him many times, probably in the 80s. But he was responsible for really the russet Burbank potato. And so we really got going with potatoes in the late 50s. And he was the guy kind of with the production and management work that got the russet Burbank going here. But now we've got a lot of russet Burbank potatoes in the state and other potatoes as well. But there's some problems with climate change and potatoes.
There are, yeah. Yeah, the russet Burbank is one of the most popular ones that growers use in the state. And it's interesting because Wisconsin's a really good place, the Central Sands region of Wisconsin is a really great place to grow potatoes because, you know, as its name implies, it's a light sandy soil. Potatoes are kind of a finicky crop. They need a lot of water, but they can't take too much. They're prone to kind of disease and rot concerns. So being in a soil that, you know, water washes through more efficiently is good for their growth, and it also makes harvesting easier, right? It's much easier to clean a potato potato that came out of a sandy soil than a thicker one, right? But that being said, potatoes also, they need a lot of nutrients. They have a really high nutrient demand, and that means nitrogen. And, you know, nitrogen applied in a sandy soil, it washes through it really, really,
really
easily.
Fast.
Exactly. Someone kind of likened it to taking a bath with the plug pulled. That's like how it can kind of go through. And, you know, with climate change, that's a concern because with these intense rainfalls becoming more frequent, it can be very, very difficult, if not almost impossible, to keep nitrogen from, you know, going further than that first foot of soil and getting into the groundwater supply.
So there we go again with another issue, and darn, potatoes. I hate to even hear about that. I flashed on one other thing that Wisconsin potato producers used to get pretty angry if they'd go to a restaurant and they'd say, "We have Idaho baking potatoes," and they'd really be Wisconsin Burbank. Probably heard that story more than one time. Well, water and cranberries go together too, and you know, that's how you cranberries are essentially grown in bogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I mean, we all have that classic picture of cranberries floating in water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're not actually grown in the water, but the growers use they flood the fields multiple times during the year, right? So in the spring, they flood it for to kind of control for pests and things like that. In the fall, they harvest it, or they do it for harvesting. And then in the winter, they flood it to kind of create ice protection to insulate the plant from the really kind of bitter temperatures that Wisconsin can have in the wintertime. And that's, you know, that was one thing that came up a lot when I was talking to researchers about what's going to happen with cranberries and climate change, is that the ice cover is going to be more difficult to manage because, you know, Wisconsin winters are warming faster than its summers. Colder places, colder times of day, that sort of thing are all warming faster than warmer times. Wisconsin, between 1980 and mid-century, is going to warm by about 4 to 11 degrees in the winter. And that's going to make managing and creating ice protection for these cranberries more difficult for farmers. So if you can't get that, they like to get it about 12 to 16 inches thick. And if you can't get that, and then you get an event like, you know, last year's polar vortex, it's a real problem, right? And cranberries are also a perennial crop, too. So if, you know, if you were to lose some, it's one, expensive to replace that crop, and two, takes about 3 years before you're going to get another fruit from it.
And we lead the world right here in Wisconsin in cranberry production.
Yeah, about 62% of cranberries come from Wisconsin. It's about a $1 billion industry for the state.
Yeah, it's big. Well, that whole business about warmer water brings to mind walleye, because I know walleye as a fish, if I'm not mistaken, like it a little cooler than they do warmer.
They sure do. They are a cool water fish. You know, walleye populations have been declining in Wisconsin for decades. About a 30% between 1990 and 2012. Climate change is part of that. It's not the full story, but the researchers I spoke to said, you know, climate change is just very pervasive because temperature affects everything in a lake, right? And Wisconsin lakes, some of them have warmed by as much as 1.5 degrees since the 1980s. And, you know, one thing along with that, as walleye populations have been declining, largemouth bass populations
have
been thriving, right? And they're a warm water fish. You know, experts are really careful to point a finger at walleye and say it's their fault. There's no evidence yet that that there's a direct connection to it. But, you know, as the lakes warm and as the temperatures get warmer, they're going to favor bass more than they favor walleye. You know, and speaking again of warming winters, one thing that researchers think might be causing the decline is, you know, the lake ice on and off is really fluctuating. So it's happening a little bit earlier some years, it's happening later other years. And so they think that, you know, when the walleye hatch, they might not be matching up with their food source. So it seems like the first summer of their life is the most precarious, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're there at the beginning, and then once the summer has passed, they just don't seem to be showing up. And that's really kind of confounded some researchers.
So was there one big surprise, or what was kind of the biggest surprise for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know that it was the biggest surprise, but I think the biggest takeaway for me was just how, you know, Wisconsin is such a diverse state in what we grow. And, you know, we're not Iowa, where most of our landscape is corn. We grow plenty of corn, but we also grow cranberries, and we grow wild rice.
Potatoes,
right? You know, and some of those things are kind of on the southern edge of their range. So, you know, and those are the species that are going to be the most vulnerable as the climate warms and things change. You know, that being said, climate change isn't going to be all bad. You know, there's longer growing seasons, which could benefit potatoes and other crops like that. That introduces a lot of other questions, right? Like how much rain is going to fall and when is it going to fall? And just kind of the unpredictability is a hard thing to deal with. But, you know, one last thing I would add to that is, you know, the experts that I talked to said that everything is gonna respond differently to climate change. You know, we shouldn't expect this kind of lockstep northward march of species, right? We should expect a lot of surprises along the way.
Well, there's speaking of surprises, there's still plenty of surprises in those stories. We talked about quite a few things, but there's a lot more that you can read about. And Mary Kate McCoy has done a wonderful job with this series of articles, and you can read them. Go to WPR.org/table.
That's right.
WPR.org/table, and you can read all about cheese and wild rice and potatoes and beer and cranberries and walleye and how they are affected by climate change. Mary Kate McCoy, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Love to talk with her again, and love to have you listening in. I'm so much appreciate being able to do this program and having a chance to talk to people like Mary Kate and hear from listeners like you. So thank you so much. Jesse LeGrew comes back on Monday to talk about some smartphone modifications and information and some other tech questions as well. So tune us back on Monday for that. And of course, thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.